Well, thank you. It is good to be here. Am I on?
Are you on?
I think I am. Okay. So it is good to be here. It's funny. People ask me every once in a while, so what's in Lewiston? Because you seem to go there every once in a while. And I said, well, I have friends there. And that's what I really look at. What I've done is I've come to visit friends this weekend. And it's great to visit you and be with friends. And so I look forward to what God would do between us. You know, so just kind of giving you an update of some things that happened to me since the last time I was here. I ride a motorcycle, and the end of May, I was riding my Harley, and I was riding with a buddy, and he was ahead of me, and he pulled over to this on the highway, and a car comes by, and he goes, after two cars came by, I figured, Where did Bill go? Because they're not going to pass him on the highway. And so he turned around and came back. And we have been heading east on Highway 14, which is the Washington side of the Columbia River there. And when he came back to where I was, he found me facing west in a ditch. I'd run my bike off the road, and I totaled my Harley, which is probably the worst part of the story. But I broke my back, and I was in a concussion, and I remember turning left onto the highway, and I remember waking up in the ER, and that's about all that I remember about that day. And it took, you know, about 6 weeks for me to be able to start moving again, and I'm grateful for the prayers and for God healing me, you know. I had two motorcycles, so in August, I went on a 3,600-mile bike ride through the Rockies, and my wife goes, God healed your back, but he didn't heal your stupid, you know. So I feel like I'm doing great, and it is good to be here with you. We're going to look today in a series that you're in on making some pre-decisions so that you can experience what you really would want to do, okay? And so the one that we're going to look at today is looking at the idea of faithfulness, okay? And so when we look at the idea, how would we be faithful? I think every one of us has an idea of faithful. I had an idea of faithful when Pastor Kevin said, can you slip into our series? And he said, I want you to preach on faithfulness. And I'm going, okay, I know what faithfulness is. And then I looked at the passage and went, maybe I don't. And so I hope that it'll stretch all of us a bit on the idea of what faithful is. So when I was in this motorcycle accident, my body turned black and blue from toe to head to toe. I was just completely a mess, you know. And one of the reasons was about 3 years ago, I had had a heart procedure, and they had put me on blood thinners. So when I hit, it's like all of a sudden the blood goes, yay, we're free, and just went everywhere in my body and to live, you know, and without being inside vessels or anything. And so when I did get well enough to go back and see my regular doctor, I said, hey, I have got to get off those blood thinners. And he said, okay, I'll make a deal with you. If you'll lose 30 pounds, I'll take you off of it. And I went, okay. So that's what I started to work on. And so I had this little app on my phone that tracks calories, okay? So I would eat, and then I put the calories in my phone. And at first, I was just logging whatever I ate, and I realized that I start off the day with about 1,800 calories. And when I get to dinner, I've only got 150 left. And I'm going, this is not good. What am I going to eat for 150 for dinner, you know? And so then I started to realize I could use that app and start looking at what I'm thinking I'm going to eat and figure out how many calories that was and decide if it was worth it, you know? And so I started plugging in, I want this for breakfast. I go, are you kidding me? That donut is definitely not worth all those calories, you know? And my wife would have a donut, and I pulled what my wife's been pulling on me since we got married. Could I have half your donut? You know? And so I kind of got to this place where now I can kind of use this to forecast what I want to eat and kind of manage my calories in a different way. In a lot of ways, that's what this series is about, is being able to figure out how can I look at something ahead of time and then make a decision so that I can accomplish what I'm hoping to do, okay? Sometimes people look at the Bible like I was first looking at my app. They're looking at the Bible, and at the end of the day, they start off, God, I want to walk with you. At the end of the day, you go, I haven't been doing too good at that, have I? Let's just end the day in confession, okay? Rather than looking at it, well, here's actually some directions on what a life that would please me looks like. And so pre-deciding that that's where you want to go is part of what we want to do, okay? And so making a pre-decision that I'll be faithful, we're going to look at a story in a little bit, but there's this tagline that Jesus tells in the story at least twice, where when people are reporting back to their master, the master says, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Okay? So that's really something that I think every one of us would want, is that we would want God to say, here's what I'm looking for, and I found it in you. You know, I was looking for people that were good, and he transforms us into what he defines as good. And he said, I'm looking for people that are faithful. And he actually works, partners with us so that we can be faithful. But it requires some pre-decisions, you know. And so we're going to look at three pre-decisions, aspects of that together. And those three pre-decisions are basically, can we show those up there? One is that every interaction is an opportunity to add value. Okay? So what we're talking about is the idea when you get an opportunity to talk to somebody, every time, you get to bring a value added to that interaction. You know, there are some people that that's pretty easy to do, and there are other people that I would like to avoid, you know? And at that moment, I need to be able to look at my pre-decision and go, no, this is an opportunity to bring a value added to the conversation. It's my opportunity to bless them. It's my opportunity to bring a kingdom presence to a conversation. You know, I was married for 31 years, and my wife passed away, and I've been remarried now for almost 18 years. And when I married Sue, my present wife, there were times when we first started. I was 51 when we got married. She was 50, and when we would kind of find ourselves at odds, in conflict. At first, I would just kind of let it fly, and I'm going, that wasn't great, was it? Kind of like, oh, that was way too many calories. That wasn't worth that argument. So then I got to a place where I could go, okay, James says, bridle your tongue. So we get in a tense situation, and I would kind of clam up, okay? And I thought, this is great. This is good. And then she'd be mad at me. I'm going, I didn't do it. I actually followed the Bible. I bridled my tongue. And she's going, no, that's not the same thing as having a civil conversation. That's not the same thing as actually working something out. Just clamming up, you know, so what? You went from blow up to clam up. Well, let's wise up, you know? And so she was kind of at this place where she's saying, can we talk? That's a whole different thing. You know, and when we're talking about this idea of value added, sometimes we think we're doing great if we just didn't bring chaos to a conversation. Sometimes if we just didn't blow it up, that it was a win. And actually being faithful is being able to come to somebody and being able to bring a situation. So there's a story in Scripture about a leper, okay? Not a leopard. A leper, somebody who had leprosy. And as that person comes to Jesus, what basically in the New Testament times, here's some rules for a leper, okay? If you have leprosy and you start to come within 30 feet of somebody, it's your responsibility to yell, unclean. And if you don't yell unclean, they have a right to call for your stoning, to execute you, because you became contagious within their sphere of catching it. Okay? So we have the story of this leper, and he says, Lord, if you're willing, you can heal me. And Jesus is saying, I'm willing, be healed. And he touched him. Okay, he broached that 30-foot barrier. I mean, I'm not a real big fan of the NBA, but I know a little bit about the basketball and the rules in the game and things like that. And there's a 3-point line in basketball, and it's 27 feet 9 inches from the hoop. Okay, so it's about the same distance as the leper is supposed to be screaming unclean. Okay. So if I were Jesus, I would have just pulled up and went, healed, you know? There'd be nothing about the idea that I had to go in for a layup, you know? And so Jesus comes in and he touches this guy and says, be healed. He's healing him of way more than leprosy. He's healing him of all the social wounds that everybody's given themselves permission to ignore this guy. Everybody's given themselves permission to go, I thank God that I'm not under a curse of God like that guy. All the ways that he's just heard all the things, I wonder what he did that God struck him with leprosy. All the things that were just ruthless and hurtful. Jesus went right in and touched this guy and said, you're healed. He healed him of physical leprosy, but he also healed him of all the things that were going on inside that would have kept him from ever approaching another person. You know, that was value added.
Yes.
That was coming to a place of being able to say, I'm not just going to do what I can do. I'm going to do more. I'm not just going to control myself. I'm going to bless you. And that's what we look at when we're going to pre-decide that we're going to be faithful, is that we're pre-deciding that we're going to take the opportunity to bring an added blessing or added value to every interaction we have. Okay? There's a second decision that goes with that, and it's every opportunity is an opportunity to multiply. Okay? And that's where I really want to look at this passage for a few minutes with you, where Jesus tells a parable. And he says, it's like this. There was a guy who was going on a long trip. And when he went on this long trip, he gave his money to his servants to manage. Okay, so he gives us money to his servants, and he basically, to one, and he says he distributed according to their abilities. So it wasn't even like he just said, everybody gets this amount of money. It was like he gave it to, okay, this guy has been in charge of a lot in the house, or this guy has managed some things in the household, so I'm giving him, and the measure of money that used in the parable is called talents, okay? So he gives him 5 talents of gold and says, I want you to manage this. So Jesus says that the guy immediately went out, took his 5 talents, was able to trade it and broker it and deal with it and whatever commerce that he had available to him, and he doubled it. And he said he gave to another guy 2 talents. And he said, here, I want you to manage this. And the same thing happened. That guy took his 2 talents, and rather than going, how come I didn't get 5? He took his 2 talents, went out, managed it, brokered it, was able to work with it in such way that he comes back and he has 2 more. So he's gone from 2 to 4. The other guy went from 5 to 10. And then with the other servant, he gives 1 and he says, I want you to manage this. And the guy that has the 1 talent says, man, I know my boss. He's a harsh guy. He's going to make sure, he's really going to make sure that I didn't lose this. And so he went and buried the money. And when the master returned, he went back, got his money, and he's pretty proud of himself that he didn't lose it. Pretty proud of himself that with the dips in the economy, that he didn't have, the master didn't return on a day when the Dow was down, okay? So as he brings his talent back, he gives it to the master and goes, here's your talent. I was faithful with it. And the master has said to the one with the 5, well done, you good and faithful servant. And to the one with the 2, he said, well done, you good and faithful servant. And he looked at the other one and he said, you lazy and wicked servant. Now that's a really strange thing, except that was my idea of what faithful was. Faithful was the idea that I didn't do one of the bad things. Okay? I wasn't at the place where I lost it. I didn't embezzle it. I didn't steal it. I didn't let something happen to it. So I was faithful with it. But that doesn't seem to be how Jesus defines faithful when it comes to the idea of having an opportunity where we can multiply. You know, that God invests in us some resources. Each one of you, the Bible says each one of you has been given a spiritual gift, a deposit of grace. Okay? That if you know Christ, we're called, the church is called the body of Christ. And so he deposits talents so that we can use them. And the idea is that really, like just like when this worship team was up here, you know, I usually get asked to sing on a hill far away, okay? So this worship team was up here, and I became tearful, just grateful for the talents that were up here leading us in worship. It wasn't like they just went home and sang, you know, because they have a nice voice and they sing in the shower. You know, I'm acquainted with a man that owns a recording university down in Florida. And he also has a ranch in Northern California where some of the recording artists that use the studios and different things that he owns will stay and practice. And he has a barn there where they might perform and they'll create videos or whatever from him there. He actually put microphones in each shower because a lot of times the artists will sing in the shower and sometimes they get a new song that they've just, you know, went off the top of their head. They can hit record right there in the shower and not lose it in the moment. You know what I mean? Well, if this guy was the one talented guy and he goes into a shower and he sings a song and he records it and that's the end of it, he'd say, at least, you know, I didn't put it out there where someone else could steal it. At least I didn't put it out there somewhere where someone could tell me they didn't like it. And he would play it safe. Okay? Jesus is looking at this guy and saying, You're lazy. One translation actually calls it slothful. Okay, I think of a sloth. I'm going, is a sloth really evil? I don't think so. But I don't know one university with that as their mascot. You know, so he calls him slothful, and he says, and you're wicked. He's basically saying you were so worried about how I might assess you that you didn't act in my best interest. And when God gives us a talent or a gift, he doesn't do it so that we can figure it's ours. And he gives it to us so that we can figure out how can we serve his best interest. You know, how can we multiply this resource? And I have a tendency sometimes to be at a place where I'm kind of like, how come someone else got that and I didn't get that? Rather than looking at what I've been given and saying, God, how can I use this for your best interest? And it's interesting how contagious somebody actually doing that can be to someone else. So I don't know if you were swept in it at all, being this far removed from Seattle, but it seems like at least in Wenatchee, which is only, you know, a couple hours away from Seattle, we're right now, we're in Mariner Mania. You know what I mean? And I was at a dinner here on Friday night with some pastors. I got home about 8:30 and go, well, maybe I can catch the last inning, you know? And I turned on, oh my gosh, you know, by the time it was over, I'd watched 2 hours of baseball, you know? And so my wife is not a sports fan at all. You know what I mean? It's like if I'm watching the Seahawks or watching a sports game, she'll say, you owe me one episode of The Bachelor. I'm going, oh my gosh. Okay, I won't watch any more sports. You know, so so I called her yesterday and she says to me, did you see that game? I'm going, who is this? You know? And I go, well, yeah, I did. Why did you? And she goes, I just happened to turn it on because I know you were watching it and thought maybe you wouldn't watch it. I wanted to tell you who won. She goes, boy, those people were happy when they won. You know, I mean, that was her conclusion of the game is, I don't know what happened there, but they were happy, you know. But because they were so happy, it made her excited about whatever they did. You know? And that's really part of what it looks like to even multiply what we're doing, is when there's a joy and a celebration in the midst of it, other people go, did you see that? I want that. I'm going to be involved in this mania. Whatever that is, I want in on that. That's part of what it looks like for us to be faithful with a resource God has given us. And then it multiplies. Okay? And there's a third decision that basically says every prompting of God is an opportunity to obey. Okay? I love coming to this church because there are a lot of you who are pretty attuned to God's promptings. And I love hitchhiking off of that. I'm growing in my awareness that God's pretty much prompting all the time, you know? It used to be that he had to kind of like do something crazy to just, oh, do you think that might be God, you know? To where now, you know, I can kind of pick it up a little bit. And it's interesting, like I said, my first wife and I were married for 31 years, and we could look at each other and say, it's time to leave this party, you know, it's time to leave this event, or I'm ready to be done with dinner, let's go home, you know? And when my wife died, it was just like a month later, I had a granddaughter who had a birthday, and so we're going to go to this birthday party, and it's the first kind of family event I've been to as a widower, and my youngest daughter is going to go with me, and I go, okay, Jenny, so here's the thing. We're going to have a code, and I have this dog named Maggie, and so when I say, I wonder how Maggie's doing, that means I got to get out of here, okay? And so we're talking, and she's talking to someone else, and I go, hey, I wonder how Maggie's doing. She goes, oh, she's fine, you know, and just keeps going. And man, I had to ask her about 5 times, how do you think Maggie's doing before she, oh, you know, and then it was time to go. Okay, there's a way in which we can be kind of deaf to God's promptings, you know, and it's great to be around other people who aren't to learn how to do that, you know. But I do think that one of the ways that we become more attuned to it is responding to the times when we are aware of it. You know, when we get an awareness to a prompting and we ignore it, when we get an awareness to a prompting and we go the other way, I'm pretty sure that that makes us more profoundly spiritually deaf, you know? And God heals deafness. God doesn't give up on us. He's faithful. And he continues to invest promptings with the idea that we would eventually realize this is an opportunity to do what he wants to do. This is an opportunity to join him in what he wants to do. This is our opportunity to say, God, okay, I realize you're inviting me to participate with you in something. So thank you for that. Okay? So making a decision of one of those three or all three of those on the front side that basically says, I'm not going to enter into a conversation. I'm not going to enter into a time with some people and not realize I can bring a value up. I can bring an added value. I can bring a kingdom presence. I don't have to just enter in at whatever level it's at. I can bring whatever level God's saying, bring this level. I can do that. You know, but it's seldom that it happens accidentally. That's why it's important that we pre-decide. You know, the whole idea of every resource is an opportunity to multiply is the same kind of thing. We can just almost sleepwalk through life rather than realize, why did this happen this way? You know, how do I happen to be in this airplane next to this person? When I am at a place where I want to talk to somebody, I usually bring 2 books with me on an airplane. I've got a novel, and if I want to talk to somebody, I start reading the novel because usually they'll interrupt me. And if I don't, I bring a Christian book and they don't ever interrupt me. And so when I start realizing I do have the opportunity here to figure out who is this person? You know, I mean, I'm sure you've been in those kinds of situations where it's an airplane or you're sitting at somewhere next to someone. Maybe even you're just waiting at the department where you get your license renewed, you know, and you're sitting there and all of a sudden you get an opportunity to talk. For me, it's been interesting on the learning curve of living in Wenatchee versus Portland or Seattle, which are the previous two cities I lived in, because you can live in Seattle and everybody will give you permission to never talk to them. You know, Portland's the same kind of way, and you know, unless you want to kind of throw a bomb with them, you know, a riot somehow, there's just no way that you're going to connect, okay? But in Wenatchee, it's almost like if you don't talk to somebody, they're going, are you having a bad day? You know, and they're not going to leave you alone, okay? And it's funny because when I first moved there, I said to Sue, I don't belong here. And she goes, why? I go, I'm not nice enough to live here. You know, these people are nice. I'm too much of an urbanite. I can't do it. You know, they want to talk. I drive into Costco. There's three cars in the parking lot. I'm going, this is great. I'm going to have a surgical hit in and out, you know. And I get there. There's only one aisle open because there's nobody in the store. And every one of them knows the cashier. And every one of them is going to have a 20-minute conversation. And I'm going, let me in the self-checkout. You know, I just, but I've been there 4 years now. I'm starting to realize, wait a minute, these are opportunities. And I've looked at them as drags on the system. I've looked at them as ways they're slowing me down rather than opportunities. You know, and you get the opportunity, but if you live with no margin, you don't have the ability to respond. Okay, Stephen Covey wrote a book a lot of years ago called Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And one of the things he said in his book was that responsibility is your response ability, your ability to respond. And if you live to the margins, you don't have any response margin, any response ability left. Okay, and when you don't have any responsibility, then you don't know how to take up an opportunity. And talk to somebody with value added or take a resource and somehow multiply it, okay? So I think I've probably chewed up that presentation scale a little bit, but let's see what's next, okay? So our responsibility then is, what are we going to do? How are we going to be faithful with the people God gives us? How are we going to be faithful with the resources God gives us? How are we going to be faithful with the promptings or those nudges that God gives us? Okay? That's what faithful is. It's not simply not doing the wrong thing. That's not faithful. I mean, I remember the first time I kind of thought through something like that, I heard this guy saying that a good Christian doesn't smoke. A good Christian doesn't steal. And a good Christian doesn't swear. And I'm going, oh my gosh, my dog is a better Christian than I am. You know? It's not just what we don't do, you know? I mean, when Jesus says something like, peace I give you, not as the world gives it, okay? The world means peace is the absence of conflict. For God, peace is unity. Peace is harmony. Peace is connection. Peace is an experience of love. That's not what we're looking to have with other nations. We're looking to have absence of conflict. Okay? So when Jesus says, I've come to give you peace, not as the world gives, and it's the same thing with faithful. When we think, well, faithful is just not screwing up. If I can just give you back your one talent and I didn't lose it and it's not worth any less, I was faithful. And Jesus is saying, no, that's wicked. Faithful is being able to add value. Faithful is being able to multiply a resource. Faithful is being able to respond to nudges. Okay? So what are we going to do that way? So I want to kind of come to a place of saying, it's interesting how much we underestimate the power of disobedience and we underestimate the power of obedience. Okay? We just have no real idea of what that would look like in our lives. And I want to just use kind of a quick illustration. I have a friend who's been in ministry, and we've done a lot of things together for over 40 years. Okay? In fact, we've done workshops together on what does a lifelong friend look like in ministry. And it usually gets a pretty good attendance from pastors who feel very lonely. Okay, and we have been on a church staff together, and we've lived in different states at the same time doing ministry. And he lives in Vancouver, Washington. And when I go down to teach classes in Portland, I usually stay at his house. Okay, the interesting thing to me is I dearly love him, and I dearly love his wife. And they got married when they were teenagers. Okay, and now they're in their 60s, and it's a testimony to somebody who has remained consistent in their commitment to one another. But when they were teenagers, they slept together, and she got pregnant, and he married her. And she understands he loves her, but every once in a while, there's just this little thing that comes in, and there's an enemy that whispers, he did the responsible thing, not the loving thing. He didn't choose you. He chose responsibility, and you are the byproduct of his responsibility. And it devalues her in her own head. You know, he doesn't think that. He bends over backwards to try and make sure she understands. I've had 100 ways to not choose you, and I choose you. You know, I choose you. I love you. I choose you. And if you talk to her, she'd say, I know that. But every once in a while, in those vulnerable moments, she's vulnerable to that kind of attack. We underestimate what just one unfaithful thing can do in our own lives, let alone in the lives of others. You know? And I just say that so you can understand the importance of pre-deciding. I'm going to obey. Every nudge is an opportunity for obedience. You know? And I can do that. And God is inviting us to envision what does it look like to be faithful so that when you live your life at the end, when you have your like oral exams with the judge, the professor, and he looks at you and he's either saying it wasn't a passing grade or he says, well done, good and faithful servant. Okay? It's an invitation that way. What I love about the three things that we're looking at is that it's not just like those are things we do for God. Those are actually who God is. And we image him. That's what we're designed to be, is image bearers of God. And so he looks at us as an opportunity to do a value add. He doesn't look at us and condemn us. He looks at us and invites us up. Okay? He gives us resources and actually empowers us to multiply. And he's the one doing the nudging. He's the one who, when Jesus was on earth, obeyed. He says, I only do what I see the Father doing. He obeyed the nudges. So what we have in a God is not someone who says, do what I say. He's saying, be like I am. I'm inviting you to be like I am. We sang a song, all my life you have been faithful. And he's saying, that's what I'm asking of you, that all your life you would be faithful. You know, it's interesting because faithful is one of those words that you can't necessarily say on the front side, I'm faithful. You know, it's like the word experience, okay? If you are just starting out in something, you can't say, I'm experienced. Experience only happens through experience. And faithful only happens through living through those decisions of value add, of multiplying resources, of obeying nudges. And at the end, that's when the evaluation is, you were faithful. Okay? All of us are at a place where we're not going to go 100%. All of us are at the place where we need a faithful God who says, I love you, I forgive you, and I'm still with you. Isn't that the kind of love every one of us would want? I have a Down syndrome's nephew. He's in his 30s. So he's almost at the end of what a life expectancy is on the upper end of a Down syndrome's person. And I remember being at a Thanksgiving dinner and talking to his dad when he was just like 4 or 5 years old. And I said, man, you guys do a good job of loving him. And he said, it is the hardest thing I do in my life. He goes, not because I don't love him, but because I know he's never going to throw a baseball with me in the front yard. I know he's never going to bring a report card home that I'm proud of. I know I'm never going to have a grandchild from him, you know? And he said, but we just love him. And in my head and in my heart, I went, that's what I want. I want a love that doesn't depend on me throwing a baseball. I want one that I don't have to bring good grades home for. I want one that I don't have to have a sparkly family for you to feel proud of me. You know, I want somebody who loves me no matter what. That's who God is. He's saying, my agenda for you is to be faithful, not if you're faithful enough, I'll stamp approved. It's, I'm calling you into this and I'm going to equip you and enable you for it. And it happens through Jesus Christ. So I want to just invite you to take a moment and say, and to ask yourself, God, have I just been assuming that I'm faithful and you're faithful and we're okay? I want to be clear. God, I need you to forgive me for the ways I haven't added value. I've actually taken value from people. You know, I want you to forgive me for the ways I haven't multiplied resources. I've actually used them for my own end. I want to ask you to forgive me for being deaf to your nudges. And I want you to understand God's saying, I will forgive you. And he's invited us over a threshold of saying, will you trust me? Will you ask me? So I would like to just take a moment to kind of maybe do some vertical business with God here for a second. God, I thank you that you ask of us something we could never do without you, because you don't want us to live without you. I pray in this room that those who have been living, that you might be pleased and say, well done, good and faithful servant, without you, could realize that that's not faithful. Father, would you bless? Would you multiply? Would you nudge? Would you forgive us that we might know you as our Savior and our friend? In Jesus' name, amen.